that subject is the Spirit gives life. We are told that God is Spirit. Then we are told that in Him is life. And the life is the light of men. Then we are told in the book of John that Andrew found him. When he called his brother Peter and said, "We have found him, of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote." Well, who did he find, really? "We have found him, the Spirit who gives life." So let me share with you an experience of mine. But bear in mind, as I tell you, that if anyone should ever say to you, "Look, here is Christ," or "There he is," do not believe him. Don't believe him for the simple reason, when you find him, you are like him. Yet, one who has found him can bring you to him. But do not let him point to anyone other than yourself who is the Christ. No matter who he is, how wise he seems to be, how powerful he is, don't believe him. There's no being in the world outside of self that you ever find as Christ. But you will find him. And when you find him, you are just like him. That's the face he wears. Your face raised to the 8th degree of beauty and majesty. But your face. So here in him is life. And this life is the light of men. By him all things were made. And without him was not anything made that was made. Not anything, regardless of what it is. 12 years ago, back in New York City, I tasted of the power of the age to come. That power that you and I will share together as one when we're all awake. It's a fantastic power. But since that day across the country, as I would tell the story of my experience of this power, one question was always asked. I was unable to answer that question, save from speculation. But they did not wish me to speculate. Did I know from experience? And I did not know from experience. I only knew from experience the positive side of this power. I did not know the negative side. I met no one in my travels who had experienced either the positive or the negative until this past spring in L.A. So I will share with you first the positive side, that was my experience, and then the negative side, that was this lady's experience down in L.A. As I told you, it was 12 years ago. I was taken in spirit, and I came upon a scene, a perfectly normal scene just like this, but it was in a New England town, approximately 200 years ago. You see, nothing passes away. That scene was just as alive, although if you had lived 200 years ago, to you it would have been the only reality. And the past relative to it would not exist, and the future relative to it would not exist. Only it would exist. And today this exists, and we think because it was 200 years ago, it has ceased to be. But I know it hasn't ceased to be, because I came upon it. Are these things in any way interfering? Well, I came upon this scene. It was a restaurant. It was an early, I would call it a Sunday afternoon. I felt the atmosphere of Sunday. They were all dining, a very early dinner. There was an enormous bay window looking out upon a pastoral scene. Lovely trees, waving grass, a bird was in flight, and a family of four, two young men in their early 20s, and I take it that the lady and gentleman present were their parents. They were in their early 40s. A waitress is walking towards the table with what I took to be a second course, because they were drinking soup. The young man of about 21 or 22 facing me had brought the spoon almost to his mouth, just about here. As I came in spirit into this place, I knew that if I could arrest within me an activity that I felt, that everything within my focus would freeze. No sooner did I know it than I tried it, and I stilled in me an activity that I felt. As I did so, everything froze. The diner's dining, dine not. The young man couldn't move the spoon beyond where I had arrested it. The waitress walking, walked not. The bird flying, flew not. The little grass waving, waved not. The leaves falling, which I could see before I arrested it, fell not. And everything froze as though I came into a museum, and these things were suspended by invisible threads. It seemed that way. Then I investigated. I went close and looked at these people, and they seemed to me dead. They seemed to be not alive. They could have been made of clay. Everything was frozen. And then when I had satisfied myself that they were really dead, or they appeared to be dead, then I released within me an activity which I had frozen. As I released it, everything moved on in its course. The waitress walked. The young man completed the action of taking soup. The bird completed its flight. The leaves began to fall. The little grass began to wave once more. And everything once more became animated. Well, having had that experience, I realized that life was in me. That life was an activity of my own wonderful imagination. Well, the Bible calls it spirit. For he is spirit, and in him is life. Well, I discovered what life really was. I arrested an activity in me, and they were not alive. I released that activity in me, not in them, and they were once more animated. I reanimated the entire scene. I discovered that what we call laws of nature, like gravity, is only, I would say, it's not really an absolute law, because were it an absolute law, the bird in flight should have fallen when arrested. The leaves should have continued. They should not really be suspended in space. But at least the bird in flight would have fallen. But it didn't. And the moment I released it, it continued in its flight to fulfill its purpose. I can see where the waitress would not fall. I can see where the four diners could be arrested and yet not in some strange way deny the law of gravity, but not the bird. However, as I saw it, my entire concept of life as I know it changed. So I told that story across the country in the major cities as I visited these cities. One question that is always asked is this. Were the four diners aware of the fact that they were frozen? Was the waitress aware? Well, I couldn't answer. I didn't know. I only knew, as far as I am concerned, they were dead. They were frozen, and they seemed not only to be inanimate, but to be devoid of any possibility of ever being animated until I released it from within me. When I released that activity, which now I know to be life, they once more became alive. Well, this spring in L.A., this couple, they live on the beach, down in Malibu. And it's her custom to go walking every day on the sands. And this day in question, as she was walking, looking out to an animated ocean, and seeing people on the beach walking, and everyone a normal way of living. And suddenly, and these are her words, she said, never suddenly, as I'm watching the animated, not an angry ocean, but quite a live ocean, suddenly someone or something turned me off. And I was nothing. These are her words. The ocean was nothing. The people were nothing. Everything was nothing. I stood there aware of being nothing. Then whatever turned me off, or whoever it was that turned me on again. And then once more I became someone. And the ocean something. And everything round about me once more became animated and
something?
Now, I can answer that question based upon her experience. I had the positive experience of life in myself, for I arrested it and turned it on again. But I didn't know that when I arrested it, and the four divers stopped and were still in their tracks, and the waitress was still, and the bird still, that they had the experience of being nothing. So now I know that that's our future, to actually taste of the powers of the age to come. Then it throws light on the great trial of history. For here is the embodiment of truth, the embodiment of life itself, but keen low on our level. And he stands before the personification of reason in this world. And reason asked him, "Where are you from?" And he did not answer. And then Pilate said to him, "Do you not know that I have the power to release you or the power to crucify you?" He said, "You would have no power over me had it not been given to you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me to you, he has the greater sin." That there was no power here whatsoever unless animated from above. That from above, spirit animates this entire field of recurrence. And we have our intentions. It could be arrested as this lady done south, and she felt herself to be nothing. And then someone who turned it off, turned it on, and once more she felt she was something. Now, here in the book of John, in him was life, and life was the light of men. But the light was in him, and our consciousness is simply the light turned on. When he turns it off, the light is turned off, and we are nothing. Now, it is in him that is life. By him all things are made. Without him, there was not anything made that was made. So now I will introduce you to it. And do not look outside of yourself to find him. You're going to find him within yourself. You may not see him, actually, as I described it last night, telling you the story of you, and telling you the story of my own experience when I encountered myself in deep meditation, meditating me, making this thing an animated form that moves across this creator's face. But here, if he makes all things, good, bad, and indifferent, and without him not one thing was ever made, well then let us tell you the story. A gentleman writes me, in 1933, he was sailing down the Danube from Vienna to Budapest. But when he came into Budapest, the lights were on. It was quite late. He was so startled at the sheer beauty of the lights of Budapest that he had an intense longing to always capture them, and promised himself that when he returned to America, he would look all over to find a place that would give him just such a view or something similar. He returned to his home in Missouri, and then moved on to Southern California. And there in the hills of Southern California, there was a view of that fabulous basin when it's all lit up at night, as he described it, like some wonderful lady of the evening with all of her jewelry on. And it simply stunned him. He so loved it. Well, he bought a place with that view, tore up the side, and placed an enormous window so he could always see the view. Then, 10 years ago, the one below him planted a huge grove, really, of poplar trees. And he knew, in time, the poplar trees would grow and obscure his view. He knew it. Well, the time came, which is only about a year ago, that the leaves came and the branches came and the view is obscured. In the meanwhile, he started coming to my meetings. He's been coming 2 years now. He said, "I will apply this principle of imagining. If imagining creates reality, I will stand here at this window, and with my eyes shut to the obvious, I will see the view that I have seen for years. The view I fell in love with first back in Budapest, and the view I fell in love with here when I first saw it. And for one solid week, he simply saw what formerly he remembered seeing. I told the story I remember clearly, which was a vision of mine to share with those who would come to my meetings. So having remembered my vision, I remember clearly. I think you've heard that vision of mine. And for one solid week daily, he would look and see the sight that he ought to see if the doctor trees were not there. In 1 month, the poplar trees died. Every tree that blocked the sight died. Not all the poplar trees, but every one within view of that actually died. At first, there was a shock. Then he said to himself, no, love cannot kill love. And life cannot kill life. Life simply has rearranged itself to conform to the image of my mind. Here, he discovered Christ. You said, but Christ wouldn't kill. He must listen carefully to the words. He does everything. I kill, I make alive. I wound, I heal. I create the light, I form the darkness. I do all things. There is no God but God. But if these things died before his very vision, well, then they died. The man below had, for insurance purposes, to remove the trees. So he removed all the dead trees. Then he said, I had a cat. I loved the cat. And the cat tore all my lovely rugs apart and all of my lovely chairs apart. I really loved the cat. I did not get new rugs immediately for the simple reason that when I was hoping that she would die. She was 15 years old, but she seemed to be determined to outlive Masuda Madhusudan. So here, the cat didn't die. He didn't want to kill the cat. He just wanted the cat to be trained. So he imagined the rug in the backyard, which the cat had never used. The cat was 15 years old, and he had that cat for 15 years. That the cat was on the outside, tearing everything apart from that rug. 3 days later, the cat went out and started using the rug instead of the carpets. And to the day she died, it never once came back and tore the rugs. But now he has found Christ. Because in him is life. He took life from the trees and rearranged them. Here was a cat performing a certain action for 15 years, what a habit formed. And in 3 days, that habit could be broken. And remain broken until she made her exit from this world. Well, a gentleman in the audience, when I told that story, it never occurred to him to try it until that moment when he heard the story. Well, he had a problem similar to the poplar trees, only there were not poplar trees. Seated at his dining room table, he used to feast upon a scene across a valley. And suddenly, the next door neighbor planted bamboo trees. The bamboos came and plucked off the entire site. He didn't tell his wife or the neighbor what he was doing, but he would physically seat himself at the table and then look off into space and remember what he could see before the trees grew. And he saw it clearly in his mind's eye, and for one solid week, that's what he did. And when he came home, beginning of the second week, his wife met him and said, do you know what has happened today? Our neighbor has removed all the bamboos. It was his urge. He thought he initiated the desire to completely change all the backyard and remove all the bamboos. He did not have to go next door to the neighbor and persuade him to do the gracious, decent thing as a neighbor. He didn't tell the wife or so because she might have done it. He simply sat there quietly and looked, and he saw what he would see if there were no trees there. So here are two. He found Christ, for only Christ can make a thing. Now a third body. He said, I have a little girl 8 years old. I got thinking, I'm not doing enough for my child. I don't see her enough. I should spend more time with her. That was all that he said to himself. Then he said, you know, I'm very fond of jet flying. So one day, I thought I would enjoy an imaginary flight. I found myself getting ready with my little girl and my wife, before getting ready to go off, we would go flying. But strangely enough, as we went through the door, only my little girl seemed to aid my imagination. She had never flown before. So I didn't drive the streets. I found myself right at the state at the airport. I'm explaining to my little girl all the things about an airport. Incoming planes, departing planes, weighing all the baggage and all of these things. Then instead of walking up the ramp, I found myself on the plane. I placed my little girl in my imagination at the window. Then I felt the takeoff. And here I am describing to her the things below on the ground, the buildings, the sights, all these things to her, and then I broke it. That was all. A month later, I said to my little girl, Lynn, I said, Lynn, on April the 11th, it is Father's Day and Daughter's Day. Father's Daughter's Day. So that day, you and I will spend together, just the two of us. What we will do, I don't know. But it said, came the morning of the 11th of April. And my wife is dressing, my little girl is dressing, I'm dressing. But it's just for Lynn and myself. But we went through the door together because my wife had a date with a beautician. And then we parted company and off, I went to my car. I thought, no, what would I do with Lynn for the whole day? Well, I would go and have breakfast first. And I'll take her to the beach. And following a lovely time at the beach, I'll take her to lunch. After lunch, I'll take her to the movies. So I got on the San Diego freeway. And there I am tearing down on the freeway when suddenly a feeling possessed me that I could not shake. And that feeling was to get over to the airport and take a jet to San Diego and go to the zoo. I went over to the airport, got on that jet with Lynn. Here I am in the San Diego Zoo. I'm almost at the end of my trip, and it dawned upon me what I had done in imagination. The very thing I had done, say, 6 weeks before, now comes to fulfillment. I didn't recognize it when it happened. He found Christ. I hope by these stories, without tasting of the power of the age to come, you will recognize Christ in you. For it is Christ in you that is the hope of glory, not any Christ of history. So when you hear the word Jesus, you make a mental image of a being outside of yourself. When you hear the word Jesus Christ, and you think of something on the outside that lived in time and space, as unnumbered tens of millions do, then that's not He. You haven't found Him. When you find Him, you think of no one but that presence within you that brings everything into being in your will. He's always brought it, He's bringing it, and He always will bring it, and there is no other Christ. So when you hear the word, automatically check yourself. What you think of when you hear the word Jesus Christ. If you make any mental image of another other than yourself, you have a false image. Do not believe. So if anyone should ever come to you saying, look, here is Christ. Or look, there He is. Do not believe. But in spite of that, unnumbered crowds who believe themselves good students of the Bible will judge you upon it and think that you are arrogant. And any claim on your part, but make no claim, is simply blasphemy. Yet there will never be another Christ in your life. So I can introduce you tonight to Him, as Peter was introduced by Andrew. Andrew found Him first. Andrew discovered what he did to discover the creative power within him. Who knows, it's not recorded. What Philip did to discover it, and to bring Nathaniel to it, it's not recorded. But it is told in story form. And man, in a strange way, has misunderstood the story. And now he calls the grand parable history. It isn't history, it's divine history, where this thing really comes into being in us. As He comes in us, be tested. Come test yourself and see. Do you not realize that Jesus Christ is in thee? Unless, of course, you fail to meet the test. Well, these three met the test. Unnumbered hundreds across the country are meeting the test. They may go back through habit and find now maybe some other comfort or some greater comfort in the believing of another. I ask you to find in this night, trust in this night, and take any problem in your world and exercise the Christ in you before you taste of the power of the age to come, and see if he doesn't bring that thing into your world. For by him all things are made. Without him there is nothing made that was made, nor will anything be made tomorrow by any other power. The only power in the world is Christ. In him is life, and that life is the light of men. And you will one day have the experience of shutting it off and watching people stand still. And if you remember tonight's message, you will know that they are saying within themselves, I am nothing. Absolutely nothing. As they have become aware of what was animated, and it is still, it is nothing. And then you will turn it on again, and all will move as they intended before you close it off. And that's the whole vast world in which we live. So when I said this is an animating wheel, we understand the eighth of Romans. We were made subject unto futility, not willingly, but by reason of the will of him who subjected us in hope, that the creature will be made free or set free from this bondage to corruption and obtain the glorious liberty of the children of God. When that something is set free in man, he joins the heavenly host and he is one with it. And tomorrow you and I will actually be controlling and animating this meeting. It goes on forever until that moment in time when one is ripe to be awakened and be detached from it. Another moment, another one detached from it, and we are the ones who will be doing it. Before we are actually detached from it, we taste of this power of the age to come. So here, if you were not with us when I told my vision, what a noise you've made. Pardon me? Disapprove. They don't want me to bring you Christ this night. But I have found him. And having found him, I am bringing him whether they approve or disapprove. So, many, many months ago, I had this experience to confirm the 41st chapter of the book of Genesis. For in the book of Genesis, we are told, if a dream doubles itself, but then the thing has been fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. And this is what happened to me. Again, I felt myself move in the spirit and move back in time. Not that far back, 200 years, but only, say, to the turn of the century. I found myself in this interior of a palatial home that used to dot the family at the turn of the century, these 60, 70, 80 room mansions. As I entered, there were three generations present. One invisible, but he dominated the entire household. The two generations that were visible were discussing this invisible one, who they referred to as grandfather. Well, grandfather had this system. He would stand on an empty lot. And while standing on an empty lot, he would say, and paint the most wonderful word picture, as he said it, I remember when this was an empty lot. And then he would paint the most fantastic word picture of his desire for that lot, and painted so vividly that they all saw what he saw and produced in words. It was that concept of life that made a fortune for him. It was that fortune that the two generations were now enjoying. But they didn't know his secret. They only told it as a story. When I came back, the whole thing was so vividly impressed upon my mind that I wrote it out. Having written the whole thing out, I second dream, as I entered the mansion, seeing the same people, I was grandfather. And I turned to the two generations present, and I would tell them, I remember when this was an empty lot. And then I painted the word written of my desire for that lot. So I told that story to the audience in L.A. I tell them wherever I go. For it means it is a true vision when the thing is done, as told in the 40th verse of Genesis. So the strength of that, many now are taking that system, as it were, by saying to someone or saying of someone, I remember when they were unemployed. If today they are unemployed, but in their mind's eyes, I remember when he was unemployed. If I remember when he was, I am implying he is not now. I remember when he didn't make 10,000 a year. If I say I remember when he didn't make 10,000 a year, I am implying he makes in excess of 10,000 now. If I want to push it up, I can say I remember when he did not make 20,000 a year. That would imply his income is in excess of 20,000 a year. I remember when he was just a weakling. I am implying he is not a weakling any longer. So you can take this technique and apply it to anything in the world. I remember when she was madly in love with one that I disapproved of. I remember when I couldn't even raise the question because she would not listen to me. Her father and I disapproved completely, but after all, it was her love affair, and so what could I do about it? But I remember when that was a problem. Therefore, it's no longer a problem. You can take the same attitude toward every problem in the world and bring about the solution. I remember when he had a new name. If I remember when, he no longer has it. And you can do this with everything in the world. Now, this is something that I did not induce. Visions are things you do not sit down and induce at will. No power in the world can sit and induce a vision. A vision to me is truth unmodified by the conceptual mind. You don't rationalize it. You don't sit down and think about it. It just happens. And we are told in the book of Numbers, if there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in vision, and I will speak to him in a dream. For the Lord is not a liar. So he speaks with you in a dream, but then listen carefully. When the Lord repeats the dream, it's for a great purpose. He tells you that is now fixed, and go out and tell it. Tell it as though you have received it, and everyone heard it as you received it. For the thing is now fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. But since I started telling that, I can tell you the most wonderful stories, the most fantastic results that people apply. For they apply it in a simple way. They think of someone that they know, and mentally carry on a conversation with another. I remember when, relative to the other, I remember when he was terribly disturbed because of a certain problem. And look at it now. For that would imply he is no longer disturbed. And take any problem in the world and then face it and remember when. And it's no longer that problem. So here, this man remembered when he could see across the valley 1 mile away that wonderful landscape valley. And then the man next door has the courage to cut down all the bamboos. I remember when I saw Budapest. I remember when I could see the entire valley, this grand basin called Los Angeles, and see it so vividly at night when it's all lit up. I remember when, and the trees die. I remember when that cat used to tear up all the rugs in this place. He no longer tears any rug. It goes back into the backyard and uses a little mat for its purpose. And so you can take any problem in this world and feed it with this little technique, I remember when. Try it. When it works, you will find Christ Jesus. And who did it? You will say within yourself, I. And who is doing it now when you say, I remember when? I am. Well, that's his name. The word I am is Jesus. The word I am is Jehovah. Jehovah is Jesus. Jesus is Jehovah. It's one. God became as I am, that I may be as he is. God became as we are, that we may be as he is. He isn't pretending that he's us. yet we can't bring things into this world that seemingly are seemingly impossible. Like 15-year habit of a cat, that's an impossible thing. And to have a habit of that nature of 15 years broken in 3 days without raising a finger to do it is not an impossible thing. For with God, all things are possible. It may be impossible to man, but that man didn't do it. He sat them quietly in his mind's eye and saw the cat on the outside, tearing up a mat that was placed there for the purpose to sharpen her toes or nails, but not his lovely mouth. And suddenly the cat goes out and performs the act which in his mind's eye he saw. Who did it? But only Christ could do it, therefore he found Christ. So here that's not, I hope, you were found. At least I introduced you to him, but there's no compulsion like that to make you accept him. So many people find it more comforting to go before a picture on a wall or some piece of little marble resembling a human form and worship it. Although we are warned all through Scripture to make no graven image unto me. But none. Many will still do it. I was on TV down south with this panel of five. And this archaeologist came on, and we had 2 ministers, one Baptist and one Adventist, and plus this archaeologist. When I told them about experiences, of course, they did nothing to them because that is not the way they understand the great Christian mystery. That isn't so at all, as far as they were concerned. Then as the hours went on, it was a 2-hour show. This archaeologist takes some huge, big canvas, and he begins to unveil it before the camera's eye. And here he is telling us that this is an actual picture, but the actual picture of Christ Jesus. That the light coming through had actually gone upon some kind of a cloth and left the imprint. I said to him, I shouldn't have done it because that's the unkind. I said, you are an archaeologist and you accept that. I said, no, you two are ministers of the word, as you say. Aren't you told that unless you look like him, that's not he? But where is that? In the book of John, the first epistle of John, the 3rd chapter, that here it does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him. I said to the archaeologist, do you look like him? Do you faintly resemble what you're looking at? You don't, I don't, and they don't. And yet you dare to tell this vast audience through TV that this is an actual picture of Jesus Christ? All the ministers want to go along with that. They want to go along with that. They want to believe in something outside of themselves to whom they can turn. So few will accept the true Jesus. They haven't the courage to actually accept him and live in his name and only call upon his name, and his name is I Am. That's his name. So instead of calling with the name called Jesus, call, say, I am. That's how you do it. And say, I am this. I'm making the cat. What am I doing with the cat? I'm seeing the cat outside now. That's what I'm doing with the cat. And the cat takes 3 days, all right, so it takes 3 days to break a 15-year habit. And what you're doing now, I am seeing that beautiful scene across the valley. What scene? But don't you see it? Well, I'm seeing it. I am seeing a beautiful scene across the valley. But you can't if you said it to anyone else. Look at the trees blocking your view. I am seeing the scene. And they die. And then I'm seeing another scene. And the man chops them down. And no one will believe for one moment that he who is seeing it is exercising Christ. But I will tell all of them, you wait. The day will come, maybe tonight. You will taste of a fantastic power. The power that animates the whole vast wheel of recurrence and turns it on its axis. And the day will come, you'll be detached from it. And you will be among those who are turning it and watching eagerly for the word to hatch out. As the word is hatching out, the very one in whom it hatches, you detach it. Let him walk the wheel for a little while longer. And when he makes his exit, having gone through all these scenes, he is detached permanently. And he will join the heavenly host. And then everyone in time is connected one by one. Not in groups, all one by one. So here, the Spirit gives life. to the spirit. A man gets into the spirit of talking in his imagination with a little girl and lean. He completely forgets what he did. And here, the wife doesn't join him. He didn't take the wife beyond the door in his imagination. He only took his daughter, because she was the one that really thrilled him, because she had never gone on a plane before. The wife is loved. That's no thrill to talk to her about a flight. But someone who hasn't loved, you want to comfort them. You want to protect them. Make them at ease. And so he takes the little girl in his mind's eye and shows how things are weighed and how things move up towards the departure, how planes are coming in and how they get off. And then when you get aboard, find a little girl, I'll put her next to the window and explain all the things below to her to comfort her. That's what he did. And here he is at the zoo, almost at the end of the journey. It dawns on him, this is what I did. I did this exactly 6 weeks ago. Again, we do not recognize our own harvest. At least he knows today who Jesus Christ is. When I came back from Barbados last month, there was a letter waiting for me from this man. The most marvelous letter. He said, "Never you taught me how to use my imagination." But I had the biggest economic month in the month of July. I'm having a bigger August than I had July. And July was my biggest economic month since I have been in business, and the man is 40 years old. He said, "But I had something far more startling than that. These things are essential in the world of season. One must have money, and I must have it. I have a family. I have all the obligations that go with a family, and I assume these obligations, so I must meet them. And I'm doing remarkably well since I began to use my imagination. But I have three heavenly mystical experiences that I wouldn't get all the money in the world if I had to give them up." Here at night, strangely enough, as I was going to bed, I began simply to contemplate the joy of having heard of Christ Jesus. And suddenly I felt myself moved into infinite space. I had no body. I was the center of consciousness with feeling, but no body. And the strangest, most fantastic being is accompanying me as I am moving through infinite space. And all I could say, and I heard that myself say, "God, God, God," repeating the word God, that I came back in sheer bliss. It was just joy. I simply closed my eyes again after I contemplated it for a moment, and I repeated the scene, the whole thing repeated it. And I came back even more ecstatic than the first. And last night, said to me, as I called upon one of my clients, I sat in the car, and I thought, it's still too early to go home, so what I would do, I'll sit here and simply meditate. As I closed my eyes, I suddenly became aware of being just the center of feeling. And through the door I went without opening the door of the car. I went through an adjacent hospital without opening the doors of the hospital. I went through all the rooms in the hospital and up to the very end. And strange enough, never, I actually saw the infinite soul of God. I saw it and I knew it was the soul of God. And I fused with it. As I fused with it, the words came into my being. I kept repeating to myself, "I and the Father are one. We are one." And I kept on saying, "One, one, one, one." And I kept repeating the word "one." And that happened. Now he said, while sitting in the car, I was so elated. I sat there in the same meditative mood. And suddenly before me came a flame, contained in what would be the area of an automobile tire. A flame that is consuming nothing, burning, but without consuming anything. And suddenly, out of nowhere, who approached? Moses approached. And I knew it was Moses. He approached, clothed in a tan robe, and looked into the fire. And then, to the right, came Abraham, clothed in a white robe. And then came Paul. And I knew these three intimately. And I knew it was Paul, I knew it was Abraham, and I knew it was actually Moses. I can't tell you how I know, but I knew. The three of them merged into one being, and I knew the name of that one being, and that one being was Jesus. I looked at the body, and out of the body of Jesus, who do you think I saw then? I saw myself. I am coming out of the body of Jesus. It is imagination in business and would give the whole thing up for the ecstasy of these mystical experiences. But he doesn't have to give up anything. He has found Christ within himself, who can take care of his family beautifully and still have these expanding, wonderful mystical experiences. Now he is the father of a little girl. So here all these things are taking place in our wonderful world as we go from coast to coast telling the story of Christ Jesus, telling everyone who will listen who he is. He is housed in man as man's own wonderful human imagination. So when you say, I am, if you're in pain, it is Christ in pain. If you say, I am, if you're in love, it is Christ in love. If you say, I am, at the moment you're depressed, it's Christ who is depressed. Then go back and read the 53rd chapter of the book of Isaiah. The great suffering servant. He suffers in every man who suffers. And rejoices in every man who rejoices. And the day will come, he will rise in man. And man rises with him. And it's the man who is rising. He so completely gave himself to man. Only that man rises. Not two, one rise, and it's you. No alteration in identity. No change in identity. But for all the sameness of person, a radical, radical discontinuity of form. And the form is the form of God. Although you cannot see it with mortal eye, it's the form of God that will cover you when you are detached from this people. So tonight you take this technique, I remember when. I remember when, and then just put anything on it. If tonight you deny entrance to a certain club, and you would like to join a certain club, I remember when they wouldn't accept me. I remember when I was not a member. That will imply you are a member, if you so desire it. I remember when, and fantastic things can happen with that one simple little technique. I remember when I put anything in this world upon it. That statement in itself came to me from the depths of my soul through vision. The story of grandfather, and the second experience of the same night, I was grandfather. And standing on an empty lot, I could say, I remember when this was an empty lot. And then paint my word picture for of my desire for that lot. And the lot came visibly before those to whom I spoke. So let us go into the silence now and use the technique, I remember when. Have all any questions, please? Yes, ma'am. Where do we come from? All things come from God. There's no other place, no origin outside of God. No origin outside of God. If I could quote for you, Sir James Jeans, he said, looking at this fabulous universe, he was an astrophysicist, by the way. He's been asked the question time and time again, what makes you think, because you're an astrophysicist, that there's only life on Earth, life as we know it? I mean, biological life, called man, firstly man. Because he maintained that after all of his studies, looking through the telescopes, using his mathematical concepts of life, that he couldn't find any part of the entire vast universe suited to house what we call man. That no place in the universe, as an astrophysicist, and he is still to this day considered one of the truly great astrophysicists of all time. This is Sir James Jeans. And he wrote a little book called Man and the Stars. And the one who questioned his right to say that no place in God's fabulous world could house and cradle man but Earth, he said, having been a scientist all my life, let me now share with you my own experiences even under the microscope. I use the telescope to examine the heavens, but I use the microscope to examine the little minute things of life. And man, in his attempt to reproduce himself, explodes billions of potential men, and one will come out. This is God's explosion. purpose, which is man. That's the temptation. It came from God. The whole vast thing is God. He planned it just as it has come out. And as it will be consummated. He would not be altered because that's his purpose, that's his plan. It couldn't come from any other place but God. I do not accept reincarnation. I don't. People accept it to justify the inequalities of birth. But I don't see the inequalities as an essential part of God's plan. That's part of his training. He's not a God of retribution. People insist that God must be as man Kiblo is, because he is a being of retribution. He gets even an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But God is a God of love. And that thought, if he puts himself through the furnace, it's himself that goes through the furnace, that he may shape you right into his likeness. His purpose is to make man in his image. Well, if I took that piece of clay without the clay's consent, the clay can't question my right to shape it, and it may be hurting. Maybe be hurting as I put him on that wheel. And we are hurt on the wheel. But when we come up, we are God, endowed with life in ourselves. So I'm talking to you as the same clay that you are. And I can tell you as I stand here, I have tasted of the power of the age to come. The promise that in him is life. As the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son also to have life in himself. So when I am designated Son of God by reason of my resurrection from the dead, as I am told in the book of Romans, well then I would have complete life in myself. Before the soul is complete, I have tasted of it. I know what it is to stop the wheel, at least a section of it, and start it again. Well, that is our destiny, to have life in ourselves as our Father has life in himself. I would accept that as I would accept the word fear. The word fear used to disturb me. Fear of the Lord. I find in my concordance today that the word has been wrongly translated because our use of the word, maybe the word fear meant centuries ago, what today our scholar claims the word really means, which is reverence, to revere the Lord. That's all the difference in the world. Therefore, the word that's used by you, many ages ago, of an entirely different meaning. I don't know. But I can't conceive of the God of love. Who so loved me, he became me. In any way, me avenging. I can't conceive of it. Especially when I read the scripture in the book of, the book of Romans. The 11th chapter of Romans. And God has consigned all men to disobedience that he may have mercy upon us. If he forced me to have to disobey, well then why complain? You read in the 11th chapter of the book of Romans, and God has consigned all men to disobedience, that he may have mercy upon all. He's a God of mercy. If I didn't disobey with his prompting, I would never know the difference between right and wrong, good and evil. In other words, conscience would not be born. I could remain forever in a garden of innocence. But I must leave innocence and enter the world of experience. To enter the world of experience, I have to tumble from innocence through disobedience. And disobedience awoke within me conscience. Conscience must be awakened. You know, in the world in which we live, we didn't tumble from space. We tumbled in consciousness. And in this very world today, there are those walking with us who conscience hasn't been born. They have no knowledge of right and wrong, none whatsoever. In Little Barbados, where I was just a few months ago, my nephew sat on a jury. And a man is on trial for an obvious theft. He was caught with the goods, he had other goods in his home, he stole. On the jury, this boy is saying, I don't see anything wrong with that. A jury. So my nephew said, you see nothing wrong in the man stealing, just against the law of the land. You were here because you promised when you took the oath that you would uphold the law of the land. And that's the law of the land. So I see nothing wrong in it. If I was hungry, I'd go next door, steal a chicken. I'd steal his corn. I'd steal anything. You call it stealing? I wouldn't call it stealing. It is yet more. And he held out against the 11 or 12 of the jury. And he would not bring in a unanimous verdict. So my nephew said to him, you know, I'll tell you a little bit of the law of the land now. You swore that you would actually come in here and sit with the rest of us. And with the knowledge of the law of the land as explained to you by the judge before you came in. For he challenged the jury and explained to the jury what the law is. But I'm going to go back and tell him that you perjured yourself. You know what I mean? 6 months in jail for you. So then he's guilty. Can you imagine that? 1 second before, when his skin wouldn't be touched, the man wasn't guilty. Now that he is going to be hurt, the man is guilty automatically. He hasn't yet eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And yet he's walking in the year 1964. That's why I said the field is closed. And we're all in it. And it makes no difference 1964 or the year 1000 or the year 20. What section of it doesn't mean that because you're living on the year 1964 that we know more of good and evil than those who live in the year 1. So I know that my nephew had experience with this boy. But I said, for a man, a mature man sitting on the jury, and he could not see where the man caught with all the goods in the world had done wrong. He has no consciousness of right and wrong. He has not yet eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And yet we have all need of it. Every man must need of it. That conscience may be born. When conscience is born, then the journey starts. And you start the whole vast journey. Many a person who's a dictator has no conscience born as yet. And yet he's dictating about 200 million people. No conscience. There may be today dictated in this world, maybe over 600 million people without conscience. Because a man's life means nothing. He wrote it out. It doesn't go beyond the grave. And he simply believes that this is it. And he rubs out millions of stolen people. He doesn't believe anything more than an animal life. Conscience is born. Whatever could be done with might, that was right in his mind's eye. Nothing wrong about it. Nothing wrong in his mind's eye when he was caught. So, time is new to do it, but the Father has plotted and planned everything just as it's coming out and as it's going to be culminating. Capital punishment. As far as I'm concerned, not a thing is done. It's aided by it. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see how a person by being rubbed out is in any way helped, and the people left behind helped. I don't see it. I don't think that that has been proved. I don't think so. Many a person who is now waiting a lifetime in jail, or rather be dead. First of all, lady, you'll come first. If I don't accept the incarnation, one who was born with a hunchback or deformed in any way, it would prove an unjust God. My dear, to me, God plays all the parts.